Mon on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Thursday the 5th of August and this is Game On. Coming up today, Kelly Harrington keeps our hopes high heading into the final weekend in Tokyo.
You were the flag bearer for the team. You're the flag bearer for the country now come Sunday.
As my brother says, the last mile is never crowded. And that's the way it does feel sometimes. It does feel very lonely. But I suppose that's the difference, isn't it?
Ryan O'Dwyer is in studio to preview the first of the All-Ireland hurling semi-finals as Waterford aim for revenge for this.
But you can be very proud, wherever you are, if you're from Limerick, with this incredible display. Full-time score in Croke Park, Limerick winning the All-Ireland on the ninth occasion on a full-time score of Limerick, 30 points, Waterford 19.
Very quiet Croke Park there. Paul Corry is also in studio as Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers are in European action. And BJ Botha and Shane Byrne preview the third test showdown in Cape Town.
We have now crossed over into the 80th minute, 2 hours and 12 minutes after the match started.
I think if Warren Gatland instigated the tactical nous at halftime to swing the game last week, then certainly Niamh Arbour and who else did it this time, because the Springbok pack took over convincing. And now we're going to the deciding test.
Now to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Ryan O'Dwyer, Paul Carr, you are very welcome. Another busy show to come. Plenty of sport on this weekend and there's been plenty of sport on for the last few weeks. And even this evening, Paul, we have Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk in Europa Conference League action. The Dundalk game against Vitesse Arnhem has kicked off. How's it going and what's the team looking like?
Yeah, so one change from last week, Marie, and it's a bit of a blow for Dundalk because Will Patching has had to drop out and Duffy has come in to replace him. And I say it's a blow because Patching has been so good over the last number of weeks since coming back from his loan spell at Derry, and he's linked up, I think, really well with Patrick McElhenney, and they've found a really nice balance between the squad and it seems to have worked, and they found a formula that has worked in Europe. So he's dropped out, but I mean, when you have somebody like Duffy coming back into the team, somebody who's probably the most pivotal player in their squad, it's not like they're weakening the 11. So I think Vinnie Peart's done really well over the last number of weeks. He wasn't able to bring players in. He's brought a solidity to the squad, and Dundalk look confident. They're 5 minutes in here now. Nothing really happened of note, but it's definitely going to be an uphill battle because Vitesse Arnhem are a serious outfit.
Yeah, we thought that last night as well with Bose and Pauker Tuesday night, but they managed to get the job done. Are we expecting something similar from Dundalk, do you think?
I hope so. Listen, the Bose result gives everybody hope and it gives teams confidence. I think Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers will take light and they'll take confidence from that result during the week, and it'll give you belief that, listen, we have got the potential to overturn results in Europe, and you've got an extremely experienced Dundalk squad with regards to European fixtures and going away from home and having spells without the ball. But Vitesse Arnhem finished fourth in the Dutch league last year. They finished ahead of Feyenoord. They reached the Dutch Cup final. They're only beaten 2-1 by Ajax. They've bought in players from Juventus and Schalke 04, so that gives you a bit of perspective of how big a challenge this is. But like you said, there's no reason why Dundalk can't go out and at least get a result, and your hope would be, Marie, that they have something to take back next week, that, you know, even if it was a goal between the two sides, you'd still give them a chance. But definitely going to be a difficult fixture tonight. There's going to be long spells without the ball. The Dutch teams naturally enough love to dominate possession, so it's about hanging in there, it's about biding your time, and hopefully when those chances come, you've got Dave McMillan up front who's banging form. Hopefully you can take one.
Which is better, do you think? Going away from home first and trying to come home with something or nothing, or at least to be able to bring the game back home and have the crowd, or to be at home first?
It's a good question, because 12 months ago, it's a different story when you were talking about away goals. Now that that's eliminated, you're talking about still being in the fixture. Personally, I feel that going away from home first is probably more an advantage, particularly as an Irish team, if you have some form of result, or you've something to latch on to, or at least you're still within the fixture. There's always a buzz around European nights. You see it out in Tala, whether it's Dundalk playing there or Shamrock Rovers. You see it in the Aviv on Tuesday night. The place was absolutely hopping. There was only 8,000 people there. You can rally around an Irish side, and Dundalk, with their experience of big nights in Europe, if they can go away tonight and bring something back to Dublin or Louth or wherever next week, I think that's more beneficial for them.
Ryan, you're a Tipperary man living in the shadow of Tallaght Stadium, really. You're only up the road,
yeah.
And you're also teaching in Temple Oak, which is only down the road from it. Has the League of Ireland football captured your imagination since you've came to Dublin?
Yeah, I suppose I'm in a strange position where I go into work and there's a big following in work where there's a big Shamrock Rovers following there. But I'm lucky enough to be teaching with three people that will be very involved in soccer in Ireland. Jason Carey is very involved in Piemont, and he has all his coaching licenses done. Conor Canavan, he just likes to think he's important. And then Ian Ryan, he's actually the Wexford Youths manager this year. So down the staff room there's plenty of talk about, and I just kind of nod and pretend I know what's going on.
So you're getting your education anyway.
Yeah, well, education off Jason, I wouldn't say off Ian or Connor now.
Well, we will be talking about Shamrock Rovers and their game a little bit later on. We are going to move on, and now, as you heard in the opening there, Kelly Harrington said that last mile can be a very lonely place. Well, the whole country is behind her. She got an unbelievable win to march into the final at the weekend. There was plenty of action today at the Olympics. It is day 13, and Damien O'Mara rounded all of the action up for us from Tokyo.
Game on Olympic updates with Circle K, who say, go Team Ireland, we're with you all the way. Circle K, proud partner of the Irish Olympic team.
And so day 13 has concluded at the Tokyo Games, and plenty to smile about at the Team Ireland quarters in the Olympic Village. We will quite understandably begin with boxing, where Kelly Harrington ensured early this morning Irish time that she would become only the eighth Irish boxer to contest an Olympic final. She beat the Thai boxer Sudipor Sisondi 3-2 on a split decision to book a place in Sunday's lightweight decider.
Well, I boxed Sudipor in 2018 in the World Final, and it was a 3-2 split decision. It was a very, very close decision back then. It was a chess match back then, and it was a chess match today again. She's a fantastic operator. She has a really, really strong left hand. So I was trying not to get hit with that and trying to stay away from her, trying to tease her on, like my club coach said and like my high performance coach said, trying to tease her, make her throw and then counter. I felt a little bit more comfortable towards the end, standing instead of running, and it was fantastic, you know, just brilliant, really.
It's going to be a massive final.
It's going to be a massive fight. It will be what it will be. It'll be exciting. It'll be... It's just going to be what it'll be, you know. So, looking forward to it. And I'll speak with the coaches about it. I'll speak with Noel Bourke about it. And we'll come up with a plan all together. And then we'll start to work on that over the...
You know,
the final is, but...
You were the flag bearer for the team. You're the flag bearer for the country now come Sunday.
As my brother says, the last mile is never crowded, and that's the way it does feel sometimes. It does feel very lonely, but I suppose that's the difference, isn't it? You know, to be able to hold on in there and keep it going.
The performance director with the Irish boxers here in Tokyo is Bernard Dunn.
I was amazed at how in control Kelly was, how focused she stayed, even under that high pressure. And expectation, you know, we kind of got a lot of the expectation out of the way when she was guaranteed a medal. Mm. Now it's about, okay, let's take the next step and what colour can we get? And that's what we've been focusing on, you know, really step by step. And it's helped the athletes, not just Kelly, but it's helped the whole team in terms of just being able to focus on the here and now and what we're trying to achieve right now. At this level, it's everybody's got a certain skill set in terms of when they get in that ring. But it's what you do leading up to that, it's how you prepare, it's what your process is before you get into that ring, and how you manage yourself. And right now, it's the self-management piece is probably the most important piece coming into the final.
Will you have had one eye on the Brazilian opponent now for the final for some time out, or how does that work in terms of the planning?
We honestly have been taking it step by step on every one of our athletes. We look at their immediate opponent, and then after the fight, so I would have sat and watched the Brazilian while Kelly was doing her media stuff, and kind of quick chat with the coaches there backstage. We'll meet this evening and we'll go through the initial battle plan, and then that'll be worked on over the next couple of days leading to Sunday.
Kelly is the top seed in the lightweight division. She'll now fight the reigning Brazilian world champion Beatriz Ferreira. That final will take place at 6 o'clock Irish time this coming Sunday morning. Elsewhere, Natalia Coyle sits third after the opening day of competition in the modern pentathlon. She recorded 23 victories and 12 defeats in the fencing ranking round today. Attention tomorrow switches to what is the conclusion of the competition with rounds of swimming, fencing, riding and the laser run.
I think it was really good. I was really consistent. Like, I'm absolutely buzzing after that. I think I'm like 100%, well, 90% adrenaline right now and 10% caffeine, so I'm kind of buzzing about it.
Now, heading into tomorrow, how much do you take from previous experience in Rio and in London?
Yeah, good. Like, it's really good because we've a good bit of rest now, so that's really good. And, you know, tomorrow I get to fence again and I'm really confident in my physicals. They've been really good. I've done some really, really consistent training. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to tomorrow.
Is there a sense of relief now that the competition is finally here?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I don't know. I woke up this morning and I was just very calm. So I felt very calm the whole way through, except I kind of felt like I was a bit insane on the piece sometimes. But, you know, it worked out pretty well. I'm really happy. And yeah, it's great to finally get started. I've just kind of, like, I'm really ready to go, and I just kind of felt buzzing the whole way through. I was just, yeah, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed every piece.
To athletics next, where six medal events took place at the Olympic Stadium, including the men's 400 metres. That was the showpiece of the evening session. From an Irish perspective, we had Andrew Coscarin go in the semi-finals of the men's 1500 metres. With reflections, David Matthews is alongside Greg Allen.
Well, we've got an awful lot to get through on what a really, really busy day. And we'll start with the two Irish who were involved today. Now, they weren't, you know, performances which will stand out, obviously, David, but Andrew Coscarin and David Kenny laid down real markers of what they possibly might do in the future. Coscarin was 10th in his semi-final of the 1500 metres. Getting into these Olympic Games was hugely, you know, difficult for him. He had to run right on the qualifying day, the last qualifying day, June the 29th in Lucerne, to be sure of being here, got through his heat, and then ran within 0.2 seconds of his personal best in finishing in 10th place in his semi-final in 3:35.84. He really is, you know, a guy who just lays everything down and gives everything on the day, and he's done it at Olympic Games.
Yes, he's a very honest runner, a very positive runner, and he didn't look out of place in an Olympic semi-final. And as you mentioned there, he travelled the length and breadth of Europe to try and qualify, and it didn't seem to take much out of him. I think he can use this as a great platform to go forward for the Europeans and the World Championships next year in Oregon and in Paris in 2024. But yes, a really positive night for Andrew.
Yeah, and I think the Irish 1500 metres record, which stands for more than 30 years belonging to Ray Flynn, might just fall to Andrew Coscarin, hopefully as he improves through the next 12 months and on to Paris in 2024. David Kenny, incidentally, 22-year-old from Farran Ford, the 20K walker, just to show you, just 29th out of 57 is, you know, a mid-table performance. But just to give you some context for that, Rob Heffernan, his coach, was 28th in Sydney, also at the age of 22, the age David Kenny is now. He didn't have a bad career, ending up with an Olympic bronze medalist and a World Championship gold medal. So coached by Rob Heffernan, David Kenny, definitely one for the future and finding his feet here at Olympic Games in 29th place. Now, we've had tons of action, which has been quite dramatic. We'll go through the men's 400 metres final tonight, because that was a duel between Stephen Gardner and Karani James. We knew it was going to be between the two of them, and it was. And it was won by the guy that I slightly preferred, and you had gone for Karani James, the 2012 Olympic champion.
Hindsight is 2020. No, I think Karani James got a little bit excited, ran a really fast first 200 and ultimately paid for that red hot pace. Stephen Gardner just held off the pace and basically came home in the last 100 metres in a nonchalant fashion, but such a smooth super runner, and he adds the Olympic title to that world title too.
In 43.85 seconds. So the tough women and the tough men of the multi-events, decathlon and heptathlon, that's all concluded here. And Damien Warner of Canada, bronze in Rio, medals which weren't gold at three world championships, is the gold medalist in the decathlon. And Nafi Thiam of Belgium has retained the heptathlon title. And we saw them on the track here, all of them knackered.
Well, an 800 at the end of a heptathlon and a 1500 at the end of a decathlon is the equivalent of a marathon for these superhumans.
Yeah, and we really did see them give it their all in those races that they absolutely hate at the end of their 2 days of competition, the 800 for women and the 1500 for men in the multi-events. Now, gold for America's Kate Najat in the women's pole vault, relatively modest height cleared for the gold medal of 4.90 metres by comparison to other Olympics. We saw in this morning session a real shock. Grant Holloway was the red-hot favourite to win the men's high hurdles. but it was taken by 32-year-old Hansel Parchment, who nobody really was looking at outside the top 10 of the world coming into these Olympics.
Yes, and, you know, talk about perfect timing. He was only third in the Jamaican trials, second in his heat behind Holloway, second in the semi-final behind Holloway, and in the final, he reversed the order of the previous two races. And what a time to do it.
Yeah, and now the morning session also saw Pedro Picardo of Portugal take gold in the men's triple jump with 17 metres 98. But we had in the other field event, the men's shot, an absolutely astonishing competition.
Probably the greatest shot put competition in the Olympic Games. We had Ryan Crozier throw six times over the Olympic record and finished finally with a huge throw, 23-30, which is 7 centimetres off the world record. The same result, 1, 2 and 3, as there was in Rio with Crozier, Kovacs and Thomas Walsh in third for New Zealand.
Yeah, it was an astonishing, and not often does a shot put get such attention, but that one was an absolutely wonderful spectacle. That's it on day 7. And of course, tomorrow we have two really strong Irish competitors in the men's 50k walk. Alex Wright and also Brendan Boyce, who was 6th in the World Championships in Doha. Fingers crossed they both have a good day in the heat of Sapporo.
Stephanie Meadow and Leona Maguire both sit in a tie for 11th place after the second round of the women's golf tournament. At 13 under par, America's Nelly Korda holds a 4-shot lead. Both Irish golfers are back on 4 under. Meadow shot a 5 under par 66 today. Maguire a 4 under par 67.
I feel like I played a lot better today. Gave myself a lot more chances. Didn't get off to the best of starts, but chipped in on 4, and I felt like that kind of turned the day for me. And I went on, I think I had 3 birdies in a row, 6, 7, 8, which was nice. And yeah, just felt like I played quite solid today. There was a few putts that would, had they gone in, would have completely changed the day, but it was nice to finish on a little birdie on 18, so we're heading into tomorrow.
Having yesterday qualified for today's semi-finals, Tanya Watson finished 15th in the women's 10-metre platform diving. She needed a top 12 place to advance to tomorrow's final. At 19, she's one of the younger end of the Irish contingent here in Tokyo, which means attention may now turn to Paris for 2024.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to have to assess while I'm at university, see where I'm at, see how much time I have, how much time I don't have, whatever. You know what, I'm excited for a new start at university, something maybe slightly different to focus on. This year it's been diving, and I'm really grateful that I had a gap year to focus on it. That's really good. I think diving will help me with my studies. I think if I can chuck myself off a 10-metre board at the Olympics, I think I can hopefully get through my studies. I'm really, really excited for that.
And to finish, Mark Downey finished 17th overall in the men's Omnium as Ireland's interest in track cycling got underway. He's now building towards the men's Madison, which takes place on Saturday. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So 20 minutes is gone in the Dundalk game in the Europa Conference League against Vitesse, and Paul Corrie is watching it for us. Paul, not good news for Dundalk.
No, it's going to be a tough two legs. Marie, Vitesse have gone 1-0 ahead. It's come off the back of a Dundalk corner, and Vitesse have broken really quickly from the edge of their own box, and they've broken numbers. And it was a lovely little slip ball down the side of Darragh Leahy, and Matt Sparrow has slid it past the BB. And to be honest with you, the goal was coming. I think Vitesse have been predominantly on top, and there was a couple of chances even before BB's parried one off the line and he's ended up in the net himself, and there was another couple of half chances. So it's been difficult for Dundalk, but I guess what I should point out is 2 minutes after Vitesse scored, Patrick McElhenney hit the bar with an effort from 35 yards out, and that's been Dundalk's best effort to date. But it's going to be a really tough two legs here, because Vitesse look really sharp, really at it, really bright, and that's a team who are only in the middle of their pre-season. You would imagine as these two games go along, they're going to get better and better.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping an eye on that for the rest of the hour. We're going to turn our attention to hurling now. Ryan O'Dwyer is in studio with us. Ryan, we were talking a little bit earlier about the connection that the school you teach in has to soccer. It also has a very big hurling connection.
Yeah, I suppose we're very lucky. Tadhg Na Bhforca is teaching with us. I used to be the hurler for a short period in the school, but then Tadhg came in.
Of all the people as well.
Yeah, Tadhg came in and he's just taken over. But I don't mind. He deserves it. He's a much better hurler than I am. Looking at the game the weekend, I think without Tadhg, and I know it sounds like I'm having an affair with Tadhg, but like without him centre back, I said it last week when they were playing Tip. I thought Waterford could go a long way. I thought, yep, they're very capable of beating Tip, but I think the hole that's their centre back, Shane Bennett is centre back for them at the moment, but Tadhg not being there is still a massive vacuum left that teams can expose.
And they had Éireann Daly for a while as well.
Yeah, and he's out as well. Look, against Limerick the weekend, I think they can do it. I think their style of play, the way they attack the ball, the way they just seem to play with freedom, I think they can certainly do it. I think there's a few key matchups. I think one matchup that is standing out for me is Seamus Flanagan, full forward. Prunty went over, he was named full back last day, but went over cornerback and marking Shamie Callanan. But Prunty against Flanagan, I think so much is coming from Flanagan. He's well able to take a score himself. He's physically very strong. He brings other people into it. But Prunty is very physically strong as well. So I think that's going to be a key battle. Another key battle for me is Declan Hannan, centre-back for Limerick. What's going to happen there? You look at the way he plays. He'd be nearly your traditional centre-back. He likes to sit and clean up everything.
Centre-back/quarterback, I think it's been described
yeah,
as.
Yeah, that would be one good way of saying it. When I went back to play centre-back with Kilmacode, I used to love it because when you're centre-back, you kind of get to hand out a bit of punishment rather than taking punishment. So it's nice playing centre-back. But he's your centre-back/quarterback. But are they going to try expose that? Are they going to, centre-forward last day, well, he didn't start there. Jack Prendergast was named centre forward, but it was Pat Cronin that came out and played centre forward. Whichever one is centre forward today, on Saturday, they're not going to sit on him and go to a 50-50 war with him. They're going to try pull him out of position. The way Waterford play, they break up. They try give them. They take a look up. If the right option is to play it into the full forward line, they'll play it in front of Hutchinson or Austin Gleeson. If he's in there, I think he's going to come out the field. But they look for the man inside and expose inside where there's space. But if not, they give it to the man running off the shoulder. They give it to the man that's free. If Declan Hannan sits, there's going to be that free man. He's going to pull him out. So they'll give it to him. If he pops over, whether it's Prendergast or whether it's Pat Cronin, if he pops two or three points, you have to wonder, are they going to stay having Hannan sitting centre back, or will they bring a midfielder back to mark the Roman man there? If they do that, well, then that's exposing further back the field. Now, I know the way Limerick play, they drop nearly every man. They play every man deep, except for the full forward line. They play every man deep anyway, so it's kind of cutting out that space. But I suppose you could analyse it a lot. Mm-hmm. You look at it. It's been a 3-week break for Limerick. In one way, you could say, "Oh, it's a long break. Have they been out of it for so long?" I don't think so. Look, Caroline Curd is part of their backroom team. I think she's going to have them switched on. John Kiley's going to have them switched on. They'll be ready for it. The game against Tip, the Limerick game against Tip, they only really woke up at half time. I think they were trying a bit of a different game tactic. It didn't work for them in the first half. I think Henry Sheffin said it was game over at half time. I knew they were going to come back, but I didn't expect them to outscore Tip in the third quarter, 110-1. Like, that's, look, that's mad. Look, you know what you're going to get with Limerick. They're going to be a big physical team. They're going to run. They play with a high intense work rate. Any man can score. I spoke to you last week about Dublin. If you shut down Donal Burke or one or two other players, you have to wonder where the score is going to come from. That's not the case with Limerick, but it's not the case at Waterford either. You shut down one or two and they can score. You look at Waterford there the last day, 4 points came from their backs. Shane McNulty, their cornerbacks, popped up, scored a pint. Callum Lyon scored a pint. Kieran Bennett scored two, I think. Their midfielders scored 7 points between the both of them. Like, so even if you can quieten down two or three of the forwards and they just score from frees and one or two from play, you still have 11 points coming from the backs the last day. And then that's not even including the subs that came on. Neil Montgomery scored 1-2 when he came on. Kylie and Dunford scored 2 points and 1 point respectively. So like that's 1-4 coming from the bench. I know the other side of that, you could say coming from the bench the last day for Limerick, you had Graham Mulcahy came off and you had Aaron Gillan coming on. Now he's not going to be a sub the next day. So yeah, they had a great contribution from the bench with Gillan coming on, but that's not going to happen again with him being a sub. So look, it's very 50-50. Mm-hmm. If you look at him on paper, but paper never refused ink. I still think a massive hole missing for Waterford is Tadhg Na Burka, and I know I don't mind saying that. Gleeson, you have to wonder where he's going to play. Is he going to play in the full forward line or is he going to play out the field? He played out the field the last day and you can see how good he is. If he's in full forward and the ball comes in, yeah, he can create mayhem in there. But for me, if I was picking the team, if I was Liam Cahill, I'd be sending him out the field. And I wouldn't even tell him, go out, you're playing wing forward or you're playing centre forward. Just say, go out, do whatever you want. Because someone with that, just that talent, mm-hmm. someone with that...
And also you can see it in him as well. Like you can see that he's really starting to play with more freedom that as the games go on, he's getting better and better.
That's exactly what it is. He's playing with freedom. The shackles are off him. He's just playing with that freedom, that abandon. And that's what you want every player to play with. And I think if you look the last 20 years from the start of Millennium, if you think of one team that really does, their style is playing with freedom and abandon, you look at that Waterford team, you look at some... crazy head cases that were there, like Dan Shanahan, John Milan, Ken McGrath, Tony Brown, and I'm leaving out a load there as well. They just play with freedom, and it's very hard to come up with a game plan against that, especially the way Waterford are playing. You've like if their midfielder has it, the wing back is running off the shoulder to take the ball. Like if I was wing forward and I saw the wing back doing that, I'd say, hey, get back here now. You do that again, I'll make sure you won't be able to run the next time. Do you know? So it's they're great to look at. Both teams. There's been a lot of people complaining about Limerick that they drop men back and everything like that. But you look at the scores they're putting up. Both teams they're very, very nice to look at. They're very. It's a joy to watch them. It's not negative hurling. It's real intense. It's running off the shoulder. It's hard hitting. Like there's no one getting a bang and going down. If they're going down, you know they're hurt. It's just honest hurling, and it's what you want to see. It's what hurling is.
From a Waterford point of view, just given the recent history with Limerick, how do they approach this psychologically? Because, like as you said, you know that Limerick have Caroline Curd with them, and she'll have them ready to go. But it's a different prospect for a team like Waterford heading in to face a team like Limerick.
Yeah, I think if you look at the last couple of weeks, right, I know Waterford got beaten in Munster Championship on the 27th of June. Since then, on the 17th of July, 24th of July, 31st of July, they've had match 3 weeks in a row. This is the fourth week in a row. So I think they are getting confidence in themselves every week that goes by. Like they bet Laois, they kind of, I won't say struggled over Laois because they bet them handy in the end, but they got over Laois. They came out against Galway and were nearly pipped in the end, but managed to hang on. They came out against Tip and very commanding throughout. Now, I know you could say it was a dodgy penalty there, but I think they were still in command throughout. So I think they're getting confidence in themselves. I don't think Liam Cahill is going to say to lads, no, I'm sure... He's going to mention Limerick because they're playing against Limerick and some of the players and the matchups and everything. But I think the focus, if I was Liam, I think the focus should be on Waterford and what they can bring to the table rather than distracting it and worrying about the opposition and kind of giving, no, credit where credit is due, and you have to acknowledge how good Limerick are. But if all the talk is about Limerick, then you're building them up, and subconsciously this happens. And I suppose it goes back to, I've done a lot of work with Declan Coyle and the green platform and the red platform, but you're given the opposition life, you're feeding that, and it's going into your subconscious that, oh yeah, look, Limerick, you're building them up based in your subconscious. So I think Liam will want all the focus to be on Waterford and what they can do and how good they are and what they can bring to the table. But look, it is true what you say, it is very hard to just, like, you look at the recent history with them. They were betting a dollar in the final last year. The year before, they didn't even win a game. So, and I think the year before that, they didn't even win a game either. So, like, yeah, they are coming. They are missing Éireann Daly, Tadhg Na Bhfórca. But I think they will have enough confidence in themselves to say, look, it's 15 against 15. If I suppose I'm going to back to rugby now, but you hear the rugby managers say, we stick to the process, we stick to the process. I think if Waterford stick to their process and their game plan and basically have trust in it, that what they've done so far has got them to where they are. At the start of the year, if you'd have seen what players they were missing, would you have picked them out for a semi-final? You probably wouldn't. If you saw the first game they played this year against in the Munster Championship, would you have picked them out as an All-Ireland semi-finalist? You probably wouldn't have. So they have to trust the process. They have to trust their manager. I know they trust their manager. You can see the way they're playing, that they trust Liam Cahill and the what he has instilled in them. And I think if they stick to that and focus on that, and yeah, you have to worry about Limerick, but not overburden yourself with it. I think they just go out and play the game.
And in fairness, Liam Cahill and Mikey Beavens will have looked at those games against, or that game against Limerick, and will have learned an awful lot from it, and they'll be coming into this game having areas that they know they have to improve on if they want to go out and beat Limerick.
And I think a key thing that they did the last day against Tip was get the matchups right. You can see it's not just about 15 and 15, it's about going back to Babs Keaton, horses for courses, and picking the right matchups. And look, I think Liam Cahill proved that he was able to do that the last day. He knows a lot about Limerick because they played him in last year's final. Did he get everything right in last year's final? There was a lot of things he got right. There was a few things he didn't get right, and he's going to try rectify them now. And he has seen them. He's seen what they can do when they open up in the Munster final against Tip in the third quarter there. But he's also seen what Tip did to them in the first half and what can get at Limerick. And I think if you run at Limerick, and that's what Waterford do. Waterford run. I don't think they overrun the ball. I think they'll run at you. They'll ask you questions, and they're all well able to score. And we've seen that from the scores that are coming from the half back line in midfield.
Okay, so call it.
Hit this part. I will say Limerick.
So after building Waterford up,
I know
there for ages.
I'm building Waterford up, because I think a lot of people I've talked to over the last while are saying, "Oh yeah, no, it's Limerick's All Ireland. It's Limerick's All Ireland." I still think Waterford have a big say in this year's championship. I think they can win Saturday. I think they can certainly get over Limerick, but if I'm putting money on it, it has to be on Limerick. But I would love to see Waterford win. Definitely would.
Okay, we're going to be previewing Cork and Kilkenny tomorrow with Shane McGrath, but call that one for us as well before we let you off the hook.
I'm going to say Cork.
Okay, I know give me the why, so.
We were talking off air there, and you said Kilkenny. I think Cork, and the reason I'm saying that is, like the last couple of weeks, I think they've built up a bit of momentum now. They're very confident. The way they play, like, you go out against Kilkenny, you know what you're going to get. They're going to be physical. It's going to be a physical battle. Now, I think they're changing with the times as well. They're not launching the ball in as much as they were. They're playing it through the lines. But I think if you go playing it through the lines, I think Cork are silkier with it. I think they're further along the line doing that. So I honestly think Limerick. Or sorry, the game on Sunday. I honestly think Cork.
So you were thinking Limerick-Cork final then?
Yeah, Limerick-Cork final.
Right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're back looking ahead to this weekend's Lions-South Africa game.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. We are going to turn our attention now to the Lion South Africa game because we have a series decider on Saturday and we'll have live commentary here on 2FM from 4:45 with Michael Corcoran and Donal Lenihan in South Africa and Bernard Jackman with me in studio. And to look at the game, I am joined now by BJ Botha and Shane Byrne. Shane, I'm going to go to you first because I think the big question is, at this stage, do the Lions have enough in them to put on a performance, to put on a show, to go out and do something different and show what they're trying to do down there?
Yeah, I think you could add to that, do they have the ability to influence the game like the Springbok did in the last test? Because they're certainly going to try to do that again. 65-minute, 40-minute half, you know, absolutely crazy things like that. Because to have any chance, they have to do that. They have to speed the game up. They have to keep the ball in play for as long as they can. And it's just the surprising thing I saw in the game wasn't just that South Africa were getting dominance and that they were getting control of the game. It's that I actually saw the Lions, the players, their heads go down. They were that fatigued. They were starting to mentally switch off. They were making really, really silly mistakes and giving away soft penalties. And that's the worry for me, because that's something that you, in the second test of a three-game series, you shouldn't be seeing that. And that's the one thing that hopefully the changes that have been made will revitalise the team somewhat. I still raise an eyebrow at some of the selections, but it is something that they're going to have to dig very, very deep, because there is no doubt in this whatsoever is that it's advantage Springbok at the moment.
So what ones are you raising an eyebrow to? So we know now that Bundi Aki and Henshaw are going to be in the centre. Ali Price coming in for Murray. Josh Adams and Liam Williams into the back three. And Wyn Jones and Ken Owens are in the pack. What ones are you worried about most, Shane?
Well, Van der Merwe, you know, there's one in the backs. You know, he was targeted last weekend. And he was one of the guys who didn't handle well the aerial battle. And you know, if you were South Africa, you would be centering a lot of your kicking game around him. And with the replacements that they have, the kicking game is only going to be getting better and more targeted, you would think. And that's the kind of things you would hear. Other than that, you'd be thinking the bench, the impact, the Tyke Byrne gone from it, no Henderson. You know, these are probably only wishful thinkings, but is Sam Simmons going to have an impact on a game? You know, with so little time, no Farrell on the bench. You've got Finn Russell, who we all know is an amazing player. But the one thing about this is that Gatland has played the bench very late in the tests. He hasn't given the players any sort of opportunity to have an effect on the game. So it's really, you've got to look at the 15 he's picked. We thought it would be much more of a 23-man series, that he'd be using the bench very, very early, but he hasn't done that. And so you've got to think the team he's picked is the team he thinks are going to see it through. And, you know, there's still flaws in that team.
BJ Botha is with us as well. BJ, Shane had a lot to say there in the opening. Do you agree with him? I suppose, first of all, do you agree with him that it is advantage Springboks heading into this game?
Good evening, Marie and Shane. Yeah, there's no doubt I agree with him. You know, I think definitely advantage Springboks at this stage, and it's really, you know, kind of now what the Lions can bring, and definitely need to bring something different. I think the same approach, whatever that might be, won't work. They've seen what the Springboks can do now. I think you have to look at the reality of 3-0, really. Take away the scoreline, which was quite substantial compared to the first test. However, you know, the big worries is definitely around, you know, the tight game, the scrum, the maul, and, you know, how that basically gained momentum, specifically in the second half. You know, I have to agree with him that the changes that needed to be made, and look, I'm quite excited to actually see Bundi Aki in there. I think there's no doubt that what Gatlin's put in there is get over the advantage line, you know, smash that midfield of the Springboks. However, they've been just rock solid, you know, in that defensive side. And then, yeah, another, I would say, you know, question mark for me would be, you know, the change around of the front rows. You know, I think we've seen, obviously, Cowan Dickey play the first two tests, and Ken Owens gets his chance. I like Ken Owens. I think he's a player that would have, I think, you know, thrived on more game time, especially starting. You know, he's played there for Wales and started there over, you know, many years. And then, you know, Wyn Jones with a combination with Owens, you know. So, look, I think it's going to be a tough task up front there. We know what's coming off the bench where, you know, on the other side of the Springbok side, this is a settled front row. You know, these guys have played a long time together, and we've seen what they did last week. So they know what's coming, and I suppose the big thing is that they're going to be able to, you know, increase the momentum with what's coming off the bench.
Yeah, and I think as well, Shane, Warren has been very clear about what he wants. He's looking for better tempo. He wants more flow. He wants more fluidity. But when you look at the stats, and particularly the fact that Dan Biggar just passed the ball three times during the last game, you just wonder how he is going to get from where he's at to where he wants to go.
Yeah, I thought Biggar would have been one of the changes. I thought there was a chance that Farrell wouldn't be brought in. Okay, we know he hasn't had the greatest tours, but you can't deny he's a big occasion player. Yeah, those stats are pretty stark. Are they really going to come out with a completely new game plan? I can't imagine that they are. You know, that it's not something that they would have tried in some shape or form. We know he made changes going in on his last game on the last tour, and it did have an effect, and he's not afraid to make the calls. Some of the calls just seem to be, as BJ just said there, you know, there was changes, but there needed to be more changes, really. There were some of the people who stayed that, to me, needed to be changed as well. They've been tried and tested against the South Africans who are on the rise in form, and, you know, they unfortunately were found lacking, and Biggar would be part of that, that he hasn't played that well in this test series, and even in the win, and it's something that, you know, is a concern, because we need to do something different.
Yeah, and BJ, as well, like, when you think of the way the Lions have gone about their business so far, it's pretty clear that they're not going to be able to beat South Africa at their game. Yet at the same time, they don't seem to have anybody really with that X factor, with the capabilities to do something really special, to create something.
Yeah, look, you know, as we've said before, previous to this, I think everyone's mentioned about, you know, not getting into an arm wrestle and, you know, be able to find parity at least anyway with South Africa, and even knowing what they're going to bring. And look, I think what's led to the fact that, you know, and Shane's mentioned it, is the fatigue side of things. You know, you can be as physical as you would like to, but I suppose when you are running, that engine is running no doubt they're well conditioned, but it's, I suppose, the continuous momentum that the Springboks have, you know, had on the maul, on the scrum, and then, you know, with any side, those legs are running behind a bit. So that's played a huge part, you know. And I think, look, they're gonna, the Springboks, you know, pack seems to, in one sense, improve, specifically even in the lineouts. I'm not talking that Peter Steph de Toy is a big loss, but a guy like Mostert, you know, adds another dimension to the lineout where you know, the defensive side of things are just going to improve, you know. So I suppose makes that Lions pack's job just that little, you know, more difficult. Ken Owens is really going to have to be accurate with his darts. And, you know, they're going to have to go down that channel where they're going to bring the South Africans to ground and make them make tackles. And, yeah, that physical side of the game, you know, is have to take place again, and they're going to have to find a way around that.
OK, Shane, I think another issue as well that's come up was the fact that it wasn't really a very entertaining spectacle last week. It was quite long. It was laborious. It was difficult to watch at times. It is the Lions. It's supposed to be the big showcase, you know, such an important fixture, really, for the game of rugby. Is there going to be a bit of entertainment value, do you think, this weekend?
You would hope so. I thought Ben O'Keefe was way too whistle-happy. I thought it was very hard from going into the game, considering all the fuss and kerfuffle, particularly instigated by Erasmus during the week. I thought he was very whistle-happy around ruck time. There were a few decisions that just shouldn't have been, way too quick to get on it. It resulted in a very slow game, a very hot-tempered game, which all added to the delays that are going out. Now, you see the Lions are coming out with very much with that they want discipline. They don't want any more getting involved in all that kind of things, which hopefully will help. A lot of that stuff hopefully is out of the system of both teams. But it's just the game needs to pick up. The game needs to move on. I said it at the start. The Lions have to keep the ball alive for as long as they can, because the South Africans, you know, they haven't been challenged in that respect. They needed it against the second in the second test to test out their legs, to see was there any fatigue left from the first test. They are going to be better weathered now, so it's actually a harder battle for the Lions to do, but it still is the way you've got to meet South Africa defensively on the line, meet them very, very physically. That's how you beat them, you get in among them. But you do have to test their legs. You do have to keep that ball alive. And if you don't do that, you play into their hands. And if the South Africans could design the game, considering the situation and the running they had, if they could design the game, they, you know, ideally for them, the second test was it.
OK, call it, Shane.
Oh, listen, I can't exactly turn around and go, you know, the Lions after pointing out all these things. I think they have a big battle. We have seen Warren make changes before, a mastermind, superb wins before. I can't see it happening here at the moment. I think South Africa are going to win this game.
BJ?
Yeah, look, I think obviously, you know, I just see it really a tough ask for the Lions to get over it. But, you know, the positive is that I feel that we've got a great game on our hands in the sense of the third test, going to the third test. And, you know, let's hope it's a great spectacle. But I just can't see the Lions, you know, getting past a Springbok side that is really, you know, dominant at the moment.
OK, well, that game is live here on 2FM from 4:45. Please do tune in. Michael Corcoran and Donal Lennon are in South Africa, and myself and Bernard Jackman will be in studio. PJ Botha and Shane Byrne, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the game. Hopefully it'll be a good one anyway, and we will get a winner. We'll talk to you soon. We're going to take a very quick break now and then back with more football.
Thank you, guys. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, there is some absolutely huge breaking football news right now. It has been confirmed that Lionel Messi will not continue with Barcelona. Over the last little while, social media had become awash with suggestions that he could not agree terms of a new contract with Barcelona. And in the last minute or so, their official Twitter account have tweeted the news that Messi will not be staying with the club. It was reported that there was a 5-year deal on the table and that they were trying to agree terms, but clearly they weren't able to get there. He's 34. He has became a free agent in June, so that would have brought him up till he was 39. And now, Paul Carey, he is not going to be a Barcelona player anymore.
Huge news, kind of sad news, because you associate Messi with Barcelona down through the years and the impact that he's had there. But I mean, the Spanish clubs have been, it seems, the most affected off the back of COVID-19. And, you know, financially, they haven't been able to recover, and they're not able to put or come to an agreement with Messi. But it just causes mayhem now across Europe when you think of the biggest clubs who could potentially take him in. And you could probably narrow it down to two or three of possibilities of where he can actually go, because albeit there's no transfer fee involved, his wages are going to be absolutely colossal. And you would think then, where does Messi want to go play? The two that stick out for me are back with Pep Guardiola at Man City or Paris Saint-Germain, and I can't think of too many places outside of that where he would want to go play. So it's gonna cause mayhem in the transfer market, because you then start asking questions in and around, is the Harry Kane deal going to be off the table? Then what happens to Tottenham? You know,
there's lots of people making jokes about Jack Grealish going back to Aston Villa, or Manchester City fans returning Jack Grealish to Aston Villa. Just right now as well, Barcelona have released a statement. They said, despite Barcelona and Messi having reached an agreement and the clear intention of both parties to sign a new contract today, this could not happen because of financial and structural obstacles. So as a result of this situation, Messi will not be staying at Barcelona. Both parties deeply regret that the wishes of the player and the club will ultimately not be fulfilled. Barcelona wholeheartedly expressed its gratitude to the player for his contribution to the club and wishes him the very best for the future in his personal and professional life, so they didn't have the money to pay him.
Yeah, and listen, Man City certainly have the finances. If they were going to be able to table a bid for Harry Kane, well, you can bet your bottom dollar they'll try get something to get Messi to the Premier League. And my God, what a spectacle that would be if he could join Pep Guardiola at Man City. And he might be 34, Marie, but he's just won the Copa America with Argentina. He's still, his statistics are off the charts. And it'd be huge if he could come to Man City. I'd love to see him in the Premier League, but outside of Man City and Paris Saint-Germain, I can't really think of too many other places where he'd want to go play.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to the next 24 hours now to see all of the suggestions and the social media reaction to where he is going to go. But we do have a lot to get through. Still, it is half time in Dundalk's game against Vitesse, and it is 1-0 still to Dundalk's opponents. And we have another game kicking off very, very shortly. Shamrock Rovers are playing Tuatha Dé Danann in Tala, and we are going live there now to Pat Costello. Pat.
Yes, Marie. Well, the only good thing is the sun is now shining, so hopefully we'll say that throughout the after or the evening, rather. We just had the team news coming in now. Rovers will play as it did last week against St. Pat's when they won 3-0 with three assists from Dylan Watts, two goals from Danny Mandrew, and one from Pico Lopez. So that means that Manos in goal, the back three of O'Brien, Lopez, and Grace, they'll be fronted by Finn, Watts, Towell, O'Neill, and Scales, and up front then Mandrew and Gaffney. Mandrew has scored the two of the goals last week. What about the visitors from Tuatha? Well, they are the champions of Albania and the D-Cup champions as well. They had to come back from a 2-0 last week to win. Sabino Placo got the two goals to bring them to extra time, and then Kalaku, the 23-year-old Albanian international with three caps, he got the winner from the penalty spot. They will line out as 1-4-2-3-1, and they will be Fasheri, their goalkeeper. He's a 36-year-old. A back four of Todorovski, Dragski, Arapi, 34-year-old Albanian international. He's their captain, and Kotabeli. Front two, Daja and Kabaget. Kalabashki, we'll get these right yet. Avila is our top scorer. He's 33 years of age. Kalaku, the man who scored the penalty last week, he's on loan. And Jackson, the Brazilian. And then up front is Sule Jamanov. So it's a very strong team. It's only their second time to win the Albanian championship. Rovers, for their part, well, there's a bit of a distraction for them, because off the pitch, there are stories about Celtic's interest in Liam Scales, and MK Dons have an apparent interest in manager Stephen Bradley. But we'll all kick off at 8 o'clock here in Tala Stadium.
Okay, Pat Costello, thank you so much, and best of luck as well to Shamrock Rovers in their game tonight. Right, we are a little bit late to the news, but we did have some really, really big breaking news that Lionel Messi is no longer going to be a Barcelona player. A statement has been released, the news is confirmed, and now everybody will watch and wait to see where he goes next. Paul Carey, thank you so much for coming into studio. We'll be back tomorrow with loads of reaction to Messi and looking ahead to all of the weekend sport and the Olympic Games as well. Tara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.